Welcome to another edition of Pulse. My name is Anthony Patch. You can find all of my work, all of our live streams, all of our magazines, all of our Pulse videos in our archives at anthonypatch.com. If you'd like to really see more of what I present briefly here in these introductory Pulse videos, we have over 900 live streams in our archives. We have 8 years of our monthly Entangled magazine that we've been publishing since June of 2017 that's available to all of our subscribers to both the live streams and Entangled magazine is available through anthonypatch.com. So if you're wondering who I am and where the bulk of my research and reporting takes place, that's where you can find it. Here on YouTube and some of these other platforms, I tend to focus upon geopolitical events and also invite you over to anthonypatch.com to join us as a subscriber. We are subscriber supported in the extensive research into areas such as political science, geopolitical events, military, economic, and very much in the scientific realm. And within all of the scientific disciplines, including biology, which specifically we get into genetics as it relates to some of the vaccines that we've experienced over the years, genetic modification, synthetic therapeutics, and I have to be careful with the words that I use on this platform, but nonetheless, we get into biology, quantum mechanics, things like CERN, particle physics, and of late, of course, we have extensively been delving into artificial intelligence. Our last live stream, we examined the artificially intelligent system that was announced on Monday by Elon Musk, which is his Grok 3 AI. But we've also looked at DeepSeek R1 from China. We've examined OpenAI's ChatGPT 4.01, reasoning AIs, and quantum computing itself, as well as classical supercomputing. So we really do deep dives into a broad spectrum, almost from a polymath approach, a broad spectrum of topics, but really the hallmark of what we do is factual research. We go to the source material, we go to the peer-reviewed scientific papers and journals, we go to the actual reporting and testimony, we go to patents, and so forth and so on. We're not just simply taking things from the media, from the headlines, even the alternative media. We really do the digging, and it's more along the lines of what you would consider to have been the age-old principles of investigative journalism. And that really sums up what we do here. And when I say we, it's really just my wife and myself and all of our subscribers who participate with us. And we communicate by email. We have personal phone calls between myself and our subscribers, individual phone conversations or Skype calls once a month, sometimes more often than that. And of course, we have our own private chat room known as BAND, B-A-N-D, and that is an opportunity in a safe learning environment that we have established over the years, some 12 years now of live streams. We really strive to keep the trolls out, keep the arguments out, but allow free speech within those guidelines so that people are able to share sources of information, share their own observations and conclusions. And that's much what I would like to do today. The title of today's Pulse video is Exercising the Constitution, and today is the 20th of February of 2025. It's been about 30 days since my last Pulse video, and that was purposeful. We had of course, an election. Donald Trump has been elected as president. And I really wanted to observe and examine what he was engaged in, what he was conducting over the course of his first 30 days in office. And so today is a good day, an appropriate time to just briefly kind of go over what has transpired beyond what has been covered in the mainstream and alternative media sources. Of course, what the president and Elon Musk and others have referred to as waste, fraud, abuse, and corruption. And I'd like to examine some of that. You've seen the reports coming out and heard the reports coming out of DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, led by Elon Musk. But I'm not going to delineate and go through those areas of waste, fraud, abuse, and corruption. The media has been doing quite a bit of heavy lifting in presenting those. And when I say the media, of course, it's primarily the alternative media that's been reporting. But what I'm really focused on here is what I consider the exercise of the Constitution by not only the president, but his administration and those that he has appointed into his administration. FBI, Department of Justice, Department of State, and so forth and so on, Health and Human Services. So building his cabinet, and that was his priority. But it needs to be examined, I think, within the bounds of the Constitution itself, because really, I think for the first time, at least within my lifespan, we have a president who not only understands the Constitution, but he has been advised as to the limits within which he can operate on the basis of the Constitution. He's really pushing the envelope. He's going to the boundaries of the Constitution, not so much to violate it, in my observation and my estimation of what he's done over the first 30 days, but really, I think he is, for the first time, presenting to the citizens of the United States, and I stress citizens, but also the people of the world that are observing the president and the United States government, with respect to the actions of the president and his administration within the bounds of the Constitution. It's showing to people the depth and the breadth of our Constitution. And the Constitution itself is quite unique within the world of sovereign nations. And therefore, I think oftentimes it gets glossed over. It really is not well understood in terms of its specifics, what it allows for and what it prohibits, because it does both. Thus, it's setting the bounds not only for the president, but for the government itself, elected officials, appointed officials, and those that are employees of the federal government and the states, because the Constitution, of course, focuses upon the sovereign states of the nation, not just the federal government. But what I'm emphasizing here today is the federal government, of course, but bear in mind that what I anticipate in the very near term beginning to come to light is more emphasis, more focus upon the individual states of the United States, because they are sovereign states. And the Constitution was really crafted to ensure that independence of the states, the sovereignty of the states. And so I think what you can anticipate once we get beyond the headlines of what is being revealed through the audits by DOGE, and what we'll talk about a little bit here in terms of the corruption and the legal implications as specified in the Constitution, the investigative and the judicial processes within the Constitution that I will briefly highlight today, but it's an introduction to what I will be presenting tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern Time in our two-hour live stream tonight that is devoted to examining the Constitution beyond what I'm introducing here today. But we'll get it heavily into the judicial, the investigative and judicial aspects of the Constitution tonight. But what I want to share with you and introduce to you tonight is that I anticipate the president and Elon Musk beginning to turn the focus to the states. Now, there's two aspects to that. There is the audit process of DOGE turning towards the states, and I believe beginning with California. I think California is the first that will be heavily scrutinized by DOGE. But eventually, each state will be examined in this process. And I think that's good. I think that's healthy. But the other aspect of this audit of the states, as is being conducted presently with the federal government, is to then begin to recognize the sovereignty, the power, the constitutional power, the federal constitution, as well as the constitution of individual states. And that not only do they have a tremendous amount of power guaranteed by our Constitution, but with the power come obligations. And obligations can be a double-edged sword. Obligations usually entail some financial impact. But obligations also have a societal, a political, a humanitarian aspect to the obligations of individual states. But I think really what I'm emphasizing here is that there is a coming focus, enhancement, reinforcement, encouragement, and expectations reassigned to individual states. And I think that the citizens of the United States and within those individual states, I think that the U.S. citizens will respond positively to what I'm saying. Even though there are financial impacts, there are fiduciary impacts, there are political and legal and constitutional impacts, there are legislative impacts, there are population impacts upon individual states. By beginning to take on more of their sovereign status that really has been given up by states, or they have established themselves as dependents, especially financially, dependents of the federal government and the coffers of the federal government. And I think that people recognize, as they've been seeing the audit of the federal government and the coming audit of their individual state governments, they will begin to welcome the scrutiny as well as the obligations and responsibilities. Because the Constitution is guaranteeing not only the rights of individuals, but the rights of the states. The rights mean that there is a very local representation. This is a representative government, beginning at the state level and then at the federal level. Democracy entails the direct voice of the people that is then heard through elected representatives at the state level and the federal level, representatives of the voice of the people, and I emphasize the citizens of the state and the nation. Therefore, I believe citizens will welcome the opportunity to be heard at the state level. That the constituents of their representatives to government, both in the House and in the Senate, their representatives, hearing the voice of their constituents, and by hearing the voice of their constituents, they are obligated to accurately, truthfully, legally speaking, represent the voice of the majority. This is a nation that is based upon the voice, the will of the people, meaning the majority of the people. And this is through voting. This is not based upon the voice of the lobbyists and the special interest groups and so forth and so on. This is a government that was founded and is returning to, I believe, representation of the voice and the will of the people themselves. This excludes those that are not citizens of the United States. They have no representation under the Constitution. They are not covered by the amendments to the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. There certainly is the law of the land and due process, but they are not guaranteed rights afforded to citizens. The Constitution does not apply to illegals. Okay? Now, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but I really am trying to paint a picture here today that the direction that the president is headed is back to state sovereignty and state responsibility and the voice of the people at the local representation level. Towns, cities, counties, state governments. When the president speaks of reducing the size of government, this is what he really means. When we hear of thousands of federal workers, by whatever means, no longer employed by the United States government, by the United States government at the federal level, this means that there is that shift from, let's say, Washington and all of the activities of federal workers being shifted to the state levels, being divided. I think it's probably occurred to many of you that you think, well, gee, some of these people actually did some work, had responsibilities, that there are things that we depend upon the federal government to follow through on. And if a lot of those people are no longer part of the government, then who picks up those responsibilities, those actions on behalf of the citizens? And I think that's a logical, that's a fair question. The answer, I believe, is that those activities, those responsibilities, will be shifted to the state level, where really the Constitution intended for those activities to reside and to be held accountable for those activities. But again, the states need to undergo a financial audit as well. So there is quite a shift that is coming, and this is really representative of what we do in these live streams, what we do in the pages of our monthly magazine, Entangled Magazine, is try to show you the direction that things are headed, what I refer to as expectations. We can expect something in government or finance or in science or in politics or in warfare, in international conflict, where, at least in my estimation, where I expect things to head and what may happen in those ensuing events. So if that's of interest to you, you can find more of my work at anthonypatch.com. So the Constitution provides for the common defense of the nation. I'd like to read the very short preamble to the United States Constitution. And again, this is emblematic of what we do in the live streams. We go to source material, valid source material. We cite, and a lot of times we define words and terms. Words are very important, and thus words should be chosen and utilized carefully. And so we do a lot of defining of words and then applying words because of their power, because of their impact. Okay? So let's go to the words in from the United States Senate page and the preamble to the United States Constitution. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. That's the Constitution. I don't think you'll find this anywhere else in the world. But it sets the boundaries for the federal government. It is setting the boundaries for the individual sovereign states themselves. But the focus today and in tonight's live stream is on the federal aspects, the federal portion of the Constitution. And tonight I'll go through the House and the Senate. We will look at the separation of powers. We will look at the executive branch and the powers within the executive branch that are really stretching the envelope of the Constitution, not violating, but sharing with the world, this is how broad, how encompassing our Constitution really is. That there is a tremendous amount of, number one, responsibility placed on the president, but with the responsibility, a great deal of power. And I believe, as I said earlier, that at least in my lifetime that I can recall, this is the first time a president has really pushed that envelope in the three aspects of the executive branch, which, first of all, the president is the chief executive officer of the United States. This is no different than being the CEO of a company. Okay? Oftentimes, President Trump, we are reminded of his business background, and his paradigm of reality is through the lens of a businessman, you know, the art of the deal, et cetera, et cetera, a real estate developer, a negotiator. Well, he is, in the Constitution, the chief executive officer of the executive branch. Secondly, he is the commander-in-chief of all armed forces of the United States. And number three, and I think this oftentimes sort of is forgotten, number three is he is the chief law enforcement officer. He's the CEO, he's the commander-in-chief, and he's the LEO. And by appointment, his cabinet, of course, Department of Justice, Federal Bureau of Investigation. And these are things I'm going to focus on tonight and really explain those roles and powers. The FBI is part of the Department of Justice. Department of Justice works hand in hand with another branch of government, which is the judicial branch. We have the executive, we have the judicial, and of course, with the House and Senate, the Congress in totality is the legislative branch. And we're going to break down who actually has control and responsibility over the purse strings, as the Constitution outlines it. What does the legislative branch have authority over in terms of spending? Which is what this whole DOGE audit process is really looking at. And beyond just looking at the financials, here's another expectation for you. It is going to be, like I said, a focus on the states for financials. But now within the federal government, the focus, looking at the financials, but now looking at those that have a fiduciary, a financial responsibility for the purse strings of the U.S. Treasury. Because the Constitution, the preamble says in there that this is for the common defense, right? This is for the common defense of the nation, of the people, to defend the people, okay? It says to provide for the common defense. It also says promote the general welfare. That means the Treasury and who it is that is allowed to access the Treasury and determine how the monies of the Treasury from the citizenry, how those monies are to be spent, how they are to be allocated. What we are looking at here through the lens of DOGE, through this audit, is we are about to see the individuals who have violated the Constitution, each of whom put their hand on the Bible, their left hand on the Bible, their right hand, and swore an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States, and so forth and so on. They are in violation of that oath. And when in violation, they can be held accountable. They can be investigated under a probable cause, of a violation or the commission of a crime or others, beyond just talking about the criminal aspect or civil law violations, code of conduct. And code of conduct applies not only to the elected officials, but also to the appointed federal judges, much of which you've heard about federal judges who are either have or planning to issue temporary restraining orders, TROs, to inhibit the actions of DOGE and the president. I will do a deep dive into the code of conduct tonight, because not only did they swear an oath to the Constitution, but they swear an oath to their code of conduct. And it does not require criminal prosecution or findings of a civil court action. Simply the appearance of impropriety and violation of the code of conduct is enough for the president to bring actions of impeachment against a federal judge. See, the president appoints judges, and they're, of course, they have to pass scrutiny through the House and Senate. They have to be voted upon in order to be put in positions, but they can be removed, not by the president, but they can be impeached by the House and Senate, and I'll detail that tonight. But it is the code of conduct that I am expecting that this audit that is going to then focus not only on the financials, but the individuals who are responsible for these financials, responsible either in the appropriate spending of the monies or inappropriate spending of the monies of the Treasury. It is the legislative branch that is responsible for the monies of the Treasury. And those members of the House and Senate, Congress in totality, that are going to feel the gaze of DOGE. And there will be, I expect, specific names being cited and specific improprieties, and I'm taking this right out of the code of conduct, certain improprieties that will be presented through evidence to the American people and to the world that is observing really what is not only a financial review, it's not only a financial audit, but it is a revelation. It is a revealing and a revolution. Again, look these words up and look at the definitions, because there are multiple definitions to words. This is a revolution. There are no bullets being used. There are certainly demonstrations in the streets, but for all intents and purposes, things are still peaceful in the United States. But nonetheless, there is a revolution underway. In terms of defining some words, tonight we will look at the definition of sovereign states. And then we are going to look at some words that you've heard that have been bandied about in all of the various media outlets. Words like treason, sedition, and subversion. There are multiple definitions and applications of those words, but we will go in and look at these and apply them to individuals, not only in the financial aspect, but now who are violating their code of conduct, either as elected officials or, in the case of federal judges, appointed officials. They're violating the Constitution and the code of conduct. When found guilty of these violations, there will be words, again, expectation for you, words of such as sedition, subversion, and treason being applied to the actions of certain individuals that have recently transpired just in the last couple of weeks in response to the activities of DOGE. I'd like to end with this. I would suggest, and perhaps this could be construed as words of warning, words of wisdom, words of caution to elected and appointed federal officials, that you should go back and read the Constitution, recognize your roles and responsibilities that are set forth, look at the state that you represent, your state constitution, for your roles and responsibilities and methods of accountability. Review your code of conduct that you also swore an oath to uphold and how you are held to a higher standard. And I'd like to give you an example. Most of us are familiar with law enforcement officials, police officers. And many of us know police officers and have interacted with police officers. We understand that they are held to a higher standard of personal and professional conduct. A police officer cannot, in his or her private time, engage in criminal activity, okay? Or activity that is unbecoming of their position as a police officer, and so forth and so on. In their professional conduct, there are codes of conduct. Therefore, there is a higher level of professionalism in private conduct and professional conduct, a higher level of professionalism that the citizens that they swore an oath to serve and protect, a higher expectation as to their behavior, their performance, their attitude, their appearance. And that higher level of expectation of proper conduct is a higher standard exceeding the standard of the citizens themselves that those law enforcement officers swore an oath to serve and to protect. We can intuitively and from our own experience, we understand that and we agree on that. Yes, when a police officer is selected and trained and certified and is given a badge, there's a tremendous amount of power, but a tremendous amount of responsibility that badge signifies. And they understand that they are held to a much higher level of scrutiny by those that they serve. I offer to you to pick up that example of a police officer and apply it to your senator, to your congressperson, to your federal judge, to your federal employee even, but not so much the federal employees. They don't really swear an oath. Some do, some don't. Like an FBI agent swears an oath. That's law enforcement. But when we talk about an elected official or an official that is appointed by elected officials, like the president, they swear an oath. Therefore, there is the expectation on their part, their understanding that they will be subject to intense scrutiny, continuous observation, surveillance, and scrutiny by the citizens they've been elected or appointed to serve. That's, they understand that, or they should understand that. So when they are called on the carpet, so to speak, when they are undergoing this audit and DOGE casts its gaze upon those individual officials, it should come as no surprise. DOGE is the scrutiny, as the Code of Conduct uses that word. They are to be scrutinized, to be examined, drilling down into the fine details of their activities. It's not punitive. It is part of the job description. It is part of what they accept as part of the job. It is what they swear an oath to agree to be scrutinized and with scrutiny to answer the findings of that scrutiny. Therefore, when they go out on the streets before the media and scream and yell and defame and subvert and tell overt lies and misconstrue the facts and twist the facts and figures and in some cases get outright hysterical before the media, all of what I just said is a violation. Each of those points is a violation of their code of conduct. If you had a police officer stand before the media, before the cameras and the microphones, and act in an irrational manner, you would be aghast. You would say that person should not be wearing that badge and be dressed in that uniform. You no doubt should be saying the same of these elected and appointed federal officials. And the gaze of DOGE, as I said, is going to go to the same, the counterparts within the individual sovereign states and their elected and appointed officials at the state level. So what we try to do here in defining, and we try to set up a learning environment, we try to look at things carefully, critically, you know, critical thinking, which is really independent thinking, to look at things logically, step by step, piece by piece, put it together, try to keep the hysterics out of it, and look at things in a cogent and sober manner, stepping away from the media portrayal of things, and really come to some understanding of not only what is going on, but where things are going, what our expectations are. And that's what I've just shared with you today, our expectations. This is a constitutional event on the part of the president and his people. The audit, the appointing of Elon Musk to his position, is well within the bounds of the Constitution. He is the chief executive officer. He can appoint as an executive his subordinates in the business. It is the business of the country that the president is responsible for. The business of the country. Those that are screaming hysterically for the arrest of Elon Musk, or saying that he has no right to access the personal private information of anyone in the United States. They don't make a distinction between citizen and non-citizen in their hysteria, but he does have a right. And it isn't so much a right as it is, he has the legal authority afforded to him by his appointment, by the chief executive officer, who was duly elected as the representative of the will of the people, the majority will of the people, the president. He has every constitutional authority, Elon Musk. And then the members of the cabinet. He should be understood to be no different than any other member of the president's cabinet, because essentially that's really what he is. I find it interesting when people try to make this argument that the information that the government has on and about individual citizens of the United States, I stress citizens, that somehow someone who's been given the authority by the president should not have access, or even the head of an agency like Social Security should not be given access to what is considered private information on a citizen. Well, what is the job description of the federal employees who are not elected, who are simply hired into their positions? They have access to your and my private information, private in the definition of it residing in the databases of the U.S. government. Fellow citizens have access by way of their job description to our Social Security information, our voter registration, our IRS records, and so forth and so on. Therefore, what I'm saying is that Elon Musk is no different than any other federal employee. His job description is provided by the chief executive officer, which gives him the authority to access the data, the information, but also constrains, by way of his job description, what it is that he has access to. And this is lost in the hysterics of those speaking before the media. Anyway, I've gone a little longer than I intended to today, but please join us at 7 o'clock through anthonypatch.com, 7 o'clock Eastern. We do this 3 times a week. Today is Thursday. We'll do another one on Sunday and another one on Tuesday. Those are our regular broadcast days of the week. Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. Every week we've been doing this since 2018 on this particular schedule, but really for 12 years of broadcasting. Almost 1,000 live streams in the archives. 8 years of the magazine, Entangled Magazine, where we really provide the source material, we give you the references, we give you the links, we go into the nuts and bolts of the given topic for that month. This month, it will be artificial intelligence that we, again, we've devoted many issues to. We will examine the latest in Grok 3 and the data centers of Elon Musk, but also the Stargate project and those data centers and energy production. So let's wrap this up. This is about a revolution in the United States, but I want to emphasize it is within the bounds set forth by the United States Constitution. And the revolution is simply the exercising of the U.S. Constitution. God bless you all.